On this Labor Day, we're talking about unions in Wisconsin. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new Gallup poll finds that support for unions is about as high as it's been in a half century. 125 years ago, President Grover Cleveland signed a law establishing the Labor Day holiday after a period of labor unrest in our country. But the favorable opinion of unions today hasn't translated into more of them, especially as states put restrictions on collective bargaining. Are you in a union? What's your job? And what do you gain from your membership in union dues? We're at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Bloomingdale is president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. Stephanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, and good morning, and happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you. What are Wisconsin labor unions focused on today? What is the priority?
Well, today is Labor Day, and this is a day that we pause and honor the achievements of American workers throughout our history. And we pay respect to those who fought before us and won many of the rights that working people have today. And it's also a chance to look at where we need to improve working people's lives. So yes, Labor Day is the only national holiday that celebrates workers themselves and recognizes, and we thank unions and the people that came before us for the 8-hour day, weekends, the end of child labor, and also unemployment compensation, workman's compensation. And it is a time where we really check where we are today, because right now there's so much more left to do in terms of making sure that working people have a fair shot to have a better life for themselves. And far too many people are working more than one job. Our wages are stagnant. In fact, over the last 30 years, we see that wages have only risen in real terms about 11% since 1978, yet CEO pay has gone up 978%. So we need a change in that, and the change to that kind of massive inequality that we see is to open the path for more workers to organize into unions. We know there's a direct correlation between union density and income inequality. The only way to solve our problem with workers falling behind is to make sure that workers can come together free of intimidation and harassment to organize unions in their workplaces. And one of the bills in Congress right now, which is protecting the right to organize, is the PRO Act. And this act will do many things to solve that problem and take away many of the barriers that working people see when they try to organize right now. Many times companies and CEOs will hire million-dollar shady consultants that come in and try to dissuade and harass workers from their right to organize with their coworkers. Well, and we know when coworkers come together with their voices together, they can bargain for better wages, better working conditions. And that not only helps themselves, but it also helps all working people because it raises the wages and expectations of all workers.
Well, let's look at legislation for a moment. And Act 10, Governor Scott Walker passed Act 10 in 2011. Remind us what changed with that overhaul of collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin.
Well, really, we saw a eight years of attacks on working people we call the union buster in chief, Scott Walker, which were happy that we have a new governor, Governor Evers, in Wisconsin today. But over Scott Walker's terms, his first target and was working people. And he passed Act 10, as we all remember, which took away the right to collective bargaining in real terms for public sector workers. And that really hurt not only the workers in the public sector, but hurt all of us that receive services from state and municipal services. So those workers, what he wanted to do was attempt to weaken the voice of public sector workers. But public sector workers are continuing to advocate for themselves, are continuing to advocate for the clients, the people that they serve. And we will continue to do that and continue to work to restore all of the rights that Scott Walker has taken away and to even go further for working people.
Talking with Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, with your questions as well on labor unions, join in at 800-642-1234. What labor issues are you seeing? What changes do you want the state to make? Have you seen unions change your industry, change your business? You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Ed now, joining us from West Allis. Hi, Ed.
Well, this has been another real disastrous year in the state of Wisconsin for organized labor. We had the demolition, very symbolically, of the GMC plant in Janesville, which says to us that we're worthless, that our labor is not worth anything. We moved from the winter and the demolition to Mr. Hagedorn's election on the state Supreme Court. We had a good candidate. She didn't push the election into a recall, and now we have this virulently anti-union, union-busting justice on the state Supreme Court.
Well, Ed, I want to pause here because you're bringing up a multiple political issues, but specifically, how are auto worker unions doing, Stephanie? Ed brings up the demolition of the GM plant in Janesville and the final step of making sure to be able to rebuild the property in a different way?
Well, clearly we have seen, and Jerry's right, we have seen the so many different factories and manufacturing close in Wisconsin, and that has had a devastating effect on the workers and their families. And this is something that has certainly hurt Wisconsin workers with the trade deals that have gone on with NAFTA, with different trade deals that have negatively affected workers in Wisconsin. And he also brought up the elections, and certainly, you know, we saw a great win for working people in 2018 with Governor Tony Evers and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, whose parents are proud union members, and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes carries that message every day. But then we came to the spring, and we know that we did not get over the finish line with that Supreme Court election. And that just shows how important every single vote in Wisconsin is, that this is a state that is that wins elections or loses elections on a razor's edge, and how important it is going to be for Wisconsin people in Wisconsin to really understand the issues coming into the next election in 2020, because it is critical that in this year that we elect a person that is going to represent working people, that is going to be true to the ideals that they talk about in their campaign, and that is going to level the playing field for working people. Because so many people are hurting right now in terms of the kind of jobs they have, the work that they do, the pay that they receive in their pockets,
and we
the rising cost of health insurance.
Pause right there with Stephanie Bloomingdale. She is president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. You can join in. What labor issues are you seeing? What changes do you want Wisconsin to make in collective bargaining? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. On this Labor Day, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're getting a read on organized labor in Wisconsin, the past, the future. In 2015, Wisconsin became the 25th so-called right-to-work state, making union dues optional. Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that government workers cannot be required to pay for a union's negotiations on their behalf. Union members account for 8% of wage and salary workers here in Wisconsin. So what labor issue is foremost on your mind? Are you struggling to find work? What profession are you in? What obstacles do you find? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us WPR Mornings. Stephanie Bloomingdale is president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Rich joining us from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Thank you very much for having a labor program on Labor Day, first off. Thanks very much for that. I'm curious about what your guest has to say on the fact that in many other places in the world, unions are highly valued by managers and owners of business. I taught briefly in Denmark, and their union membership is extremely high in a neighboring country, one of the most successful in Europe, Germany. And Germany gave us many of our immigrants. Wisconsin has a really strong Germanic tradition in it. You were just talking about beer earlier, and brewery workers were unionized. I don't understand why Americans have been brought to the conclusion. I think it's been a campaign by certain ideas in our culture that unions are sort of viewed as un-American.
Well, and Rich, let's see what Stephanie has to say about that. What do we know from our European counterparts, Stephanie?
Rich, you are completely correct in that many European countries and other countries throughout the world have embraced working men and women in their unions as a positive force for industry and a positive force for good production of products and services and goods. And we have seen over the decades mass focused attacks on the institution of unions. And we have seen this, and the reason that they do this, well, I think it's pretty clear they want to only maximize their short-term profits. And this is a real problem for the long-term trajectory for not only working Americans, but for all of Americans. Because when working men and women come together in their unions to have a better ability to bargain for wages, good wages and benefits, this helps not only the unionized workers, but helps all workers. And in turn, helps to fuel the economy by having people be able to buy the goods and services that they help to create. So it's a virtual circle that helps everyone in the long run. But sadly, we have seen a lot of these think tanks or the organizations like the Koch brothers and others that want to see the basic institution of organized labor destroyed. And that is something that we fight against each and every day, and something that we need to make sure that people understand how important unions are to a healthy, thriving economy.
Stephanie, you brought up, and I just want to interject here, you brought up Governor Evers' administration earlier. How have you seen the Evers administration so far deal with labor issues in Wisconsin?
Well, Governor Evers is a number one supporter of working people and their right to organize. And that is something which is very refreshing for us here in Wisconsin. And we work very well with him and look forward to working with him as we restore all of the rights that have been taken away by Scott Walker and his allies that really need to be restored. And when you talk about your guest or your caller, Rich, talked about that people's perceptions of unions. And I am happy to report that is turning around. And we see and you mentioned this in the beginning, Kate, that just this week we saw a Gallup poll that showed that unions are at a 50-year high for support. So 64% of Americans support unions today, which is a 50-year high.
Let's look at the landmark Supreme Court ruling, Janus versus AFSCME, last year. Now unions can't charge non-union worker fees for collective bargaining. How have unions adjusted to that?
Well, certainly these attacks on working people were designed to weaken the institution of their unions. And we saw that as well, and we know that for a variety of reasons, the courts have been stacked the way they are. But how has that played out? That's played out in working people's unions each and every day, making sure that they are talking to their members. Members are understanding the value of the unions and signing people up to engage and participate in those organizations.
But have unions been impacted financially in the last year that they can't mandate non-members to pay fees? What do fees look like?
Well, certainly that is true throughout the nation. And, of course, here with our public sector unions during Act 10, that had already happened. So it's, a bit different. And really the Act 10 that was implemented is very much worse for public sector workers because of some of the inability to bargain over meaningful financial items. But certainly it has had an effect on working people's unions, and everyone suffers because of that. And so what we need to do is work every day to turn that around, to make sure that every working person is fully engaged in their union. That's the only way to have strong unions and a strong middle class.
Talking with Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. Let's bring in Duane now, joining us from Adams County. Hi, Duane.
Hello.
What's on your mind about unions?
Well, my question is, in some communities where they have organized public sector workers, and the union, through the bargaining, increase wages beyond at a faster rate than the residents in their community, and drives up costs and property taxes and things like that. What's the theory on what's the theory on how that works? Where's the benefit for the community when firefighters get into the six digits in earning range and people in the community are still struggling to get there?
Duane, thanks for the call. Stephanie, what is your response to that?
Well, I think the best thing for working people to do is to look to lift all boats, to find out how we can raise all of our wages. And working people are unhappy and frustrated because of the wages that have been stagnant, like I said, since 1978, only going up 12% in that whole time, while CEO pay has gone up almost 1,000%. And so that has hurt working people, many of them having to work more than one job, which really it's unpatriotic to ask anyone to work more than one full-time job to make ends meet.
But so, union membership has been steadily declining since the mid-80s. Why do you think that is?
That is because of direct attacks on the ability to come together in unions. And we've seen that those attacks and those changes in the laws, which allow for union busters to come in when people are organizing their unions and basically break the law, with very little, very little penalties whatsoever. And so we know that that income inequality is directly correlated to union density, and we need to make sure that we pass that Protecting the Right to Organize Act, which is in Congress right now, which will level the playing field for workers to come together and organize in their union.
very quickly.
When that happens, everyone does better. All working people will do better.
When you became president last year, there was some focus on the fact that you were the first female president of the state AFL-CIO. Do you think about gender in your leadership role and what women in power, in the power to negotiate?
Well, certainly I do because I'm a woman. So I think about I think about that every day. And it is very exciting for me to be the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO and to really take the organization in a direction which focuses on growth, not only for our present union members, but for really opening the door to all workers who work for a living in all different sectors, sectors that are dominated mostly by women, and also places that people haven't organized before. So I'm really excited about making sure that we're electing union members to public office at all levels of government.
Well, Stephanie,
maximizing our collective voice at the ballot box and winning
you.
For workers.
Thank you for thank joining you. Us. Stephanie Bloomingdale is president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. We'll be back for more State Capitol Report after this news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking about education policy and a call for bipartisanship. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Gallup does a yearly poll on how people feel about the quality of K-12 education in the U.S., and for the first time in 15 years, a slim majority, 51%, are satisfied with the overall quality of education that students in kindergarten through grade 12 get. And this is up from 43% last year. Where can Democrats and Republicans come together on education policy? What education bills are most important to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Luther Olson is a Republican state senator from Ripon, and he chairs the Senate Committee on Education. He recently co-wrote an op-ed in The Hill. It's called, "We Need to Return Education Policy to Its Bipartisan Roots." State Senator Olson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. What a beautiful day.
Yeah, well, happy Labor Day.
You too.
You wrote this op-ed that education has a powerful legacy as this historically nonpartisan issue. How do you see education having the power to unite across the aisle?
Well, you know, everyone really cares about quality education for our boys and girls in our state and in the country. And it's vital that we make sure that we educate every student to their full capacity. And it's just not a Republican or a Democrat idea. Now, the issue is we have different thoughts on how to do that. But it's so important that we need to really put our political differences aside and improve the quality. Because as you just said on the last poll, people are not very happy with their public education system that education their kids are getting.
And in writing this op-ed, you joined with a Democratic state representative from Washington, Sharon Tamiko Santos. What is the story there and how the two of you came together to get this word out?
Sure. Sharon and I have known each other for a number of years. We're both involved in ECS, Education Commission of the States. She was co-chair of that, vice chair. I know I was the vice chair of that organization a few years ago. She and I both are involved in NCSL, National Conference of State Legislators, and both have co-chaired at different times the education committee that has. And then we both had the opportunity to be in Aspen, Colorado at the Aspen Institute just a little better than a year ago, talking about education issues, and decided to team up and saying, you know what, we've worked together. There's an issue here. One of the things that came out of that conference, it was a week-long conference, is that education is important. The achievement gap is big, and we need to work together as Republicans and Democrats to make sure that every child has the best education they possibly can have.
Education is sometimes debated as a federal versus state issue, especially when it comes to how we set guidelines. Are you calling on state leaders to take more of a role here on how education is laid out in Wisconsin?
We are. In fact, education is a state function. It's not a federal function. And, you know, we had the No Time Left Behind. It was sort of interesting because a number of years ago, they were going to get rid of the Department of Education, and the business community met with congressmen and senators and said, you know, the school system we have in this country is not preparing students for the jobs that we're going to have in the 21st century. And so rather than just abandoning K-12, they went with No Child Left Behind, saying every child will be successful. That did not quite work as they thought. And so now they have the Every Child Succeeds Act. And really, they gave up power and put it back in the hands of the state, which it always was, and said, you guys tell us what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and we will hold you accountable for your outcomes. And so Wisconsin has a team put up a plan, a waiver plan, and that was approved by the Department of Education in D.C., and we're working on it. And the goal is to cut the achievement gap in half in 6 years, which was a couple of years ago that we started, and then after that, close it, which is a big challenge, but it's really one of the biggest challenges we have for education in our state.
Yeah, explain what the education gap is and why it is such an issue in Wisconsin.
Well, the achievement gap is the gap between white students and African-American students. They have the biggest achievement gap, although when I go to national meetings, every state says they do, so it all depends on how you figure it. But we have a big achievement gap between the African-Americans and white students, and we need to narrow that. Really, we don't need to bring the top down. We need to bring the bottom up. We need to make sure that every student is successful. And one of the ways that we can do that, and I heard some international speakers talk about that, and they said, you know, really trying to close the achievement gap is really tough. But he said, if you go about it with a theory that starting with the elementary grades, every student achieves at least grade level. And if you do that, then they don't fall behind, and you can just keep moving that up the ladder. And it's going to take a little while, but at the end of the day, you will achieve your goal.
We're talking about education policy and openings for bipartisanship with State Senator Luther Olson of Ripon. He chairs the State Senate Committee on Education. You can join in. Where do you see room for Democrats and Republicans to work together on education? What are the biggest education issues in Wisconsin, and how would you like to see them resolved on the state and federal level? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Olson, some states have really made a big push for pre-K and 4K programs, getting kids in a school setting before they enter kindergarten. Where do you see Wisconsin on this continuum?
Well, it's interesting. It's a great question you bring that up because, I was at a conference, I think it was in Nashville about a month ago, and they had a couple of governors on the program and talking about trying to convince their states to have full-day kindergarten. And I sort of chuckled. It's like, we've had full-day kindergarten since 1989. We have 4K now. We fund it. We're looking at our Blue Ribbon Task Force, and we need to really change and even make it a full-day program. But Wisconsin has done well in early childhood education, and really the studies show that is where you get the biggest bang for your buck, because children's minds are just like a sponge at that age, and if we can direct them and get them going earlier, it really pays dividends for the rest of their career. But Wisconsin has been on the cutting edge. We were the first state, as you know, to have kindergarten totally. So if we do a good job on that compared to just about every other state.
Well, outside of the achievement gap and early childhood education, school starts tomorrow, and some rural districts, like Wabino, for instance, they're really scrambling to fill open teacher positions. How do lawmakers address the teacher shortage?
Well, that is a great question, because every state that I talk to and read about has a teacher shortage, and it's sort of like every other job. We have fewer young people. The population is down in that age range. And so it's hard to find just a number of folks going into teaching, but going into anything else. Our teacher prep institutions, our teacher colleges have had big numbers, drop in numbers of enrollees over the last, number of years. I know people say, well, it's all Act 10, but it isn't all Act 10, because other states never had Act 10, and they have pretty much the same issues that we do. It's one of the problems that I see in our state and in our country. I was involved in writing an article with a number of legislators. We looked at international education and how students do in other countries on the PISA exam, and we wrote a little booklet a couple of years ago called No Time to Lose. And one of the things that every country that is successful has is high standards to be a teacher. They pay them very well too, but they have high standards to get into the teaching profession. And what concerns me is, because we have shortfalls, we are doing alternative licensing and things like this. And some of those teachers, don't get me wrong, will be fantastic teachers. But if you're not trained in the pedagogy and making sure you know the subject, I'm not sure we're going to have the results that we want. But I guess at the end of the day, having someone in the classroom, and hopefully they're doing no harm, is better than nobody in the classroom teaching.
So you're concerned about those alternative tracks to becoming a teacher, that they won't be fully ready to be a teacher?
Well, I have that concern, because other states, or other countries, it's very difficult. But that's happening all over the United States. And I know that there's some really good teachers that come out of these alternative programs. My wife used to run one out of CESA 6 in Oshkosh a number of years ago, and she had great graduates who really did a great job in the classroom. They were second career people, and they loved teaching, and they were very successful. But, and just because you go to a four-year institution doesn't mean you're going to be really good either. So those are challenges that we have.
As many kids in Wisconsin head back to school tomorrow, we're talking with State Senator Luther Olson about education policy and how to find common ground. With your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On this Labor Day installment of the State Capitol Report, we're talking about education policy. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Many Wisconsin kids are loading up their backpacks, getting set for the start of the school year tomorrow. What education issues are pressing in your community? What state policies could affect your school district? What education bills do you want to see a bipartisan approach at the Capitol? Join in at 800-642-1234. State Senator Luther Olson is a Republican from Ripon who chairs the Senate Committee on Education, and he stays with us. Senator Olson, as we are talking there about getting enough teachers in the pipeline, especially in rural districts, should Wisconsin be offering teacher raises or better benefits to attract them to the job?
Well, money is always a factor in any job. I think schools, if they could, they would offer more. I think one of the when you do the surveys, they talk about the school climate and leadership in a building is very, very important factors that determine if a teacher is going to stay in the profession or not. And so, yeah, because money would be fabulous, but it's not the only answer. If there's other issues that teachers deal with, you know, a lot of paperwork, class, having number of kids with mental health issues that they have to deal with. When I talk to teachers, at the end of the day, they are just exhausted because of the work that they're doing. And we need to recognize that this is vitally important work in our state and in our country, because without good teachers, we're pretty much doomed.
Governor Tony Evers made education a very dominant theme of his campaign for governor last year and his proposed budget this year. What do you make of the governor's budget proposals for education?
Well, I mean, they were expensive. What we did in the legislature is we spent more money on K-12 education than we ever have in the past. We increased the revenue caps. We increased the reimbursement for special ed for the first time in, I think, 8 years. We are now reimbursing special ed cost at 30%. Now, that's not all they get. I mean, they get the regular ed money. The federal government gives them a reimbursement, and the state gives them a reimbursement. So the reimbursement for special ed cost is way higher than 30%. And if you have high-cost students, you get, you know, almost 100% reimbursement. Not quite, but it increases quite a bit. So I think that, I know that the governor made it a priority and the legislature did. That's where we spent over a $500 million increase in K-12 education in the state.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Alan is joining us from Wisconsin Dells. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. And I was a judge in Columbia County, so I have met Senator Olson a couple of committees, and I think that Senator Olson has been a very good supporter of education. I just want to make a couple of comments. I have three children that are involved in education. One is a Bearwood teacher, one is a teacher in Monticello, one other is a teacher in Wisconsin Dells. And I wanted to comment on these rural districts losing teachers or not having them in the pipeline. And my comment would be this, that during the Walker administration, virtually all educators felt a very anti-education atmosphere. And we lost a lot of tremendous teachers out of our education schools, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and others, to places like Minnesota. And I think we have to recognize education is the way out of poverty, and it's the way to success. I was a teacher for 6 years before I went back to law school, and I think we just need to give more support and money. You know, it takes money, and I know there's budgets and things, but to our teachers, and that we recognize them more than we do.
Alan, thanks for the call. Senator Olson, what is your response that we've lost a lot of talent basically from Act 10, as Alan is saying?
Well, that is the truth. We have people were very nervous that their retirement system or their retirement money was going away, which it didn't. Nobody negotiated their earned retirement away. But people were scared and upset, and we did lose teachers. I got calls from teachers in my district saying, what am I going to do? And I said, well, I don't think it's going to be a problem. But the biggest thing they were concerned about is their retirement. And our retirement system is strong, thank goodness, in the state of Wisconsin. But we did lose talent. And losing talent is one thing. But the other thing is, as I mentioned, every state in the country has a problem getting young people into the schools of education. And that is to me is the long-term issue. You know, what happened in Act 10 is, you know, a number of years ago already, but getting people to fill the pipeline is really where the issues are today.
Let's bring in Colleen now in Darlington. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Yeah, I believe that, you know, education starts with Bessie DeVos, and I watched her hearing, and it was just absolutely heartbreaking. She couldn't even answer simple questions. She has no business being at the top of this. And for furthermore, our you know, we're spending millions of dollars going into charter schools without any accountability.
All right. Well, Colleen, thanks for the call. Senator Olson, you know, Colleen bringing up the education, head of education, Betsy DeVos, and school choice. What are your thoughts there?
Well, Betsy DeVos is not the head of education. She is the head of the Department of Education in Washington. But as I said before, education is a state function. And one of the things that new education bill does is it takes pretty much a lot of the power away from the Department of Education in D.C. and puts it back in the state thing where it used to be. As far as charters, you talked about charters and you mentioned choice. In the world we live today, people want choices for their kids. And we have all kinds of educational choices. We have open enrollment where you can go from one school district to another. We have virtual charters where you can send your kid to a virtual school. We have charter schools that are public and non-public. A charter school, public charter school, is one that's authorized by the local school board. And then we have choice. We have private school choice where if you are a poor family, you can get your tuition paid at a private school. So we have a lot of choices for people, and I don't see us going backwards because parents are not interested in us taking away the choices for their children. And then, of course, we have homeschooling, which there's a number of people that say, I want to educate my child at home. And so they have that choice, too. So,
But the phrase school choice has often been associated with this push to expand Wisconsin's voucher program in recent years, which gave more parents the ability to send their kids to private schools. And as we look at bipartisanship, many Democrats see that as a polarizing move. Can you address that?
You're right. It is. And, you know, what's interesting is parents always had the ability to send their kids to a private school. They just had to pay the way. And one of the things that was started in Milwaukee, if you hit, you know, they were, people were concerned about the Milwaukee public school system. And so they were either moving out of the city or sending them to a private school. Or we had Chapter 220 where they could send their kids to a suburban district. And so it was decided that that worked all right if you have money. But if you don't have money, then you were sort of stuck in schools that were not, as Howard Fuller, the superintendent back then, said, not doing a good job for those kids. So it was felt that it shouldn't be just for people who have money to be able to send their kids to other schools. It should be for everyone.
Senator Olson, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. And I hope everyone has a great Labor Day today. It's a great day in Wisconsin.
Luther Olson is a Republican state senator from Ripon, chairing the Senate Committee on Education. His recent op-ed in The Hill is a call for a bipartisan approach to education policy. Just ahead, we explore Wisconsin's rich history with beer and brewing. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.